Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
So with the topic of neglect, just so those in the audience know, we were thinking back and forth about how to approach it because there are different types of neglect. We're going to do this all in one episode because we know this can be a heavy topic and we don't feel like putting you through secondary trauma.
It won't be the only time we've talked about it, but this is just an overview.
Well, and I want to point out that as you raise awareness that a podcast alone can't help us process through all the things we've experienced. Like, it's a good thing to ground us in understanding, and language is really helpful to be able to label some things. But when we realize that there's neglect, it's something that you need to do personal work on. And we're going to talk a little more about that as we talk about neglect, because it actually is one of those things that's going to require a lot of co-regulation with the therapist to recover. You can't recover without that part of the work.
This is not a replacement for therapy. This is to help you know if you need therapy or an aid while doing your work in therapy.
And to be completely honest, a lot of the times we give out these episodes to our clients for trying to educate them on a certain topic that they're going through. And so, you know, this is also used as a resource to just learn a little bit about it. It's kind of like the, you know, idiot's guide to blah, blah, blah that we used to read. We referenced that, I think, there's also an idiot's guide.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's an idiot's guide and there's a for dummies guide.
Haley is not calling anyone an idiot particularly.
But there are some that I might generally rope into. But anyways.
Sorry.
But I think when it comes to this kind of a topic too, yeah, we're not here to self-diagnose you. We are not, you know, your best friend's TikTok that's telling you how to identify neglect. We're here just to state, like, this is what it is. If something cues in and you're like, oh my gosh, that sounds very familiar, or this sounds really, you know, personal to what I've experienced, that's a great topic to bring to your next therapy session and a great topic to kind of process through on your own with that.
So I like that because I want to talk about, as we talk about, so there's four kinds of neglect. And like I said, we're not going to deep dive into each one, but in general, there's physical neglect, which is the failure to provide necessary food, clothing, shelter, and supervision. Medical neglect, which is not getting the medical or mental health treatment you need. Emotional neglect, which we'll go into a little bit deeper. And then educational neglect. So again, failure to provide the appropriate amount of education and resources and those kinds of things. So as we talk about that, I actually want to piggyback off what Haley said about self-diagnosing. Because a lot of times people will come to me as a therapist and they will say, my childhood was great. My parents were great. And great parents make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about neglect, it's not always intentional neglect. Often parents are doing the very best they can, and you will still have you may still experience neglect. Mm-hmm. Out of lack of their knowledge or understanding or resources. And so please understand that we're not, when we talk about neglect, we're not saying if you've experienced any of these things that you had a terrible childhood. We're saying that the experience of these things have an emotional effect on you. And I find that lots of times clients will come in my office and I'll say, that was neglect. And they'll get very defensive, very like, no, my parents were great. I love my mom. I love my dad. And I'm like, yeah. That's fine. You can love your mom and you can love your dad and you can still experience neglect. It's like saying, I have a cold, but, you know, I wore a mask. You can still get sick, even though with the mask. We did all we could to protect you and things can still happen. Mm-hmm. So I just want to point that out as we talk about neglect, because we do have the people that will feel validated by this. And some people have a really hard time talking about it because it's about relationships that we really care about sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's good to recognize too, like when we're classifying this, I think this is why we're trying to teach more about what neglect is because just like we talked about with trauma, a lot of people say, oh, I didn't have any trauma because my parents were amazing, XYZ. And we're not here to state, like, no, secretly, that was not what was happening, right? They were actually awful to you. Like, that's not it, right? And so what we're trying to show with this is that if you can educate more on the idea of neglect, on the idea of trauma, then you can appropriately not just label it the way it needs to, but recognize what actually was going on and allow yourself to realize that that word doesn't need to be as large of a meaning as you've given it in your head as an extreme scenario. We can also utilize that word to show just a classification of events that have happened, right? And that's truly what they're supposed to be used for.
So I'm going to give an example of a mother who grew up in Alaska before even part of the United States. And so she didn't grow up with the welfare that America has. So she didn't know about food stamps or any kind of support system. So that's how she grew up. But when she had her own children and she lived in the continental United States, she went through a lot of periods of not having enough food, and she didn't even realize she could go and get support from the government. So there's an example there of somebody who wasn't intentionally struggling, but just a lack of knowledge or resources created a struggle in the family. And, you know, this was a good person who tried to feed her children, and sometimes even herself would go hungry so she could feed her children. But there again, because she had a lack of food for herself, it affected the whole environment. So those are the kinds of situations where I'm saying, let's have some compassion for the situation, but also accountability of that happened, and there's an effect, and there's not enough love that can counteract not having what you need.
When we experience neglect, like we're not held as a child, we're not rocked as a child, we were not spoken to, our parents don't spend time with us. And like we talked about in the first episode, the overview of trauma, what's important about trauma is how it wires the brain or how it affects our brain development. The brain will not grow to be as large, and it will not be wired as effectively. And so what tends to happen is people will dissociate, or in other words, zone out more. They will struggle in school. They will have developmental delays in crawling, walking, eating. They will have trouble speaking. They will be primed for panic disorder, anxiety, and depression. Anxiety or depression, depending on whether the left brain or the right brain is more impacted by the neglect. The good news is that, like we talked about in the first episode of trauma, that this doesn't have to be permanent. There are many things that we can do to help develop the brain later on.
And along with that, Taylor, you said a couple words, but I would really recommend that if you notice some of those things, that you go back and listen to some of our attachment episodes, because neglect will affect attachment, because the attachment is specifically linked to getting your needs met and feeling safe. And, you know, when you have neglect, you don't feel safe. I was going to say the other thing that you can see is you can see it in difficulties in school, learning to manage a work environment, concentration, I think you already talked about. But even just forming and maintaining relationships, because of how the brain develops, becomes harder. Because it doesn't develop, it becomes harder.
Yeah, in Eastern Bloc countries, so the former USSR, what's now like Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Russia, the orphanages don't have enough funding to be able to hold the children, change the children regularly, essentially feed them as often as they can, and that's it. They experience severe neglect for not being able to have their emotional needs and a lot of their physical needs met. And so we see a lot of these signs in the children to the extreme. I've worked with a lot of them. And when you see this kind of neglect, kids basically fall into two categories. They are either, this is going to be hyperbolic, evil geniuses, or they are just the sweetest kids. And they're just a little bit delayed. People will just kind of, they'll just seem a little bit off socially. But they're pretty able, usually, to cover up the developmental delay. Sometimes they can. Or they just seem to lack some empathy and compassion.
Well, I mean, I think that's a huge That's a huge study, or those that population unfortunately has been used a lot in studies, especially with like Harlow is something that you'll hear a lot of. Harlow was the monkey experiment where you had infant monkeys that were given two options of
That's all like from breast studies.
of the one that's like padded and warm and but it doesn't have any food, or you have this kind of like steel cage
Wireframe monkey,
wireframe
yeah.
monkey, that doesn't have any padding but it has food. And the monkeys, more often than not, statistically, they went and spent their time with the nurtured, like the one that has the padding, the warmth, the things like that, even though it wasn't giving them the substance they needed, right? And so I
So
think,
they were choosing, and like it'd be physically neglected or emotionally neglected. They had to choose between the two, and I think sometimes people might relate to that idea of maybe I wasn't neglected in one way, but I did experience other neglect, and that could
At
be what
that
they
age,
were.
it's not so much a choice as it is a need. It's driven by instinct. All around the world, regardless of culture, religion, anything else you would take into account, mothers will rock their children at 80 beats a minute. And that is exactly what the heart rate needs to be for babies. And if we don't get that rhythm, the brain stem doesn't develop correctly, the midbrain won't develop correctly, those things that form the foundation for our emotional brain.
Well, and also the foundation of, like, we've talked about this before, the reptilian brain is very much entrenched in this, right? And so that part that makes us feel safe, that's in charge of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, when it becomes, if that's not developing, we have either an overreactive or an underreactive response, which in the end is there to protect us. And if so, we need to make sure that, these things are being met to just help with the overall functioning of the brain. Like Taylor's saying, and that gets into the emotional. And I think it's important too, now that we've kind of warmed you guys up, there are four different types of neglect. And I know Jen's been able to kind of look at those four. I guess which one, Jen, would be a good place to start?
I think we talked in our last episode on emotional abuse, went over some emotional neglect, right? So we talked a little bit about it in that last episode. Medical and educational neglect, I don't want to go deeply into that because that you could go into other places and those kinds of things, but that's that you didn't get your medical needs met. Educationally, you didn't get what you needed met, and so those are things that you can acknowledge.
There's something really interesting that happens if you aren't educated as a child. The brain kind of atrophies, the rational parts of the brain, being able to see the big picture, switching from tasks. And so, intellectually and even emotionally, someone will appear younger than they are.
Oh, go ahead. Well, what you were saying though, I think like with those two, the reason we're not going into, they're pretty straightforward, and it's not to say like they're not important, but educational, emotional, or educational and medical, those two, they are in the title of it, in the sense of your medical needs aren't being met. And that's not just by medical professionals. That's also like you skin your knee or have a cut and mom and dad don't do anything about it. And they're like, well, you handle it yourself, and then you're the one who has to take care of yourself. Or, you even have more extreme cases where, you hear about kids who get the flu or something more extreme, like recently COVID or things like that. And the parents, if they don't take care of that, and instead, and this can also go into a weird range of like when it comes to neglect, there's also this kind of weird part of it that's like you have like your religious, your political rights, things like that. So we won't go into those nuances, but those do sometimes interfere or get involved with the neglect issue, which you will see big like court cases throughout the country about, a parent who knew their child had this type of medical condition due to religious reasons. They didn't feel they could treat it, so therefore the parents being charged for medical neglect, things like that. So I just want to like touch on it to say we know that that's there. But what we're talking about, especially in this spectrum, is definitely more of the other ones mentioned.
Well, and it's interesting too how the emotional and physical neglect actually are usually behind actual medical and educational neglect. For example, if we're not paying attention to our kids as infants and we're not meeting their needs and they're sitting in a soiled diaper for hours, that will lead to a medical issue. right? And they might get sores and wounds that then need to be taken care of, and that can exacerbate and those kinds of things. And so it's all very tied into each other. And then educationally, I think, again, I go back to what did people know and what did they have access to? But making sure your child knows the educational options, and is able to go to some type of learning and mental stimulation, because like Taylor mentioned, if there's not educational experiences, their brain will atrophy. And every child has slightly different needs medically and educationally. And so you have to pay attention to that. I've seen kids who were understimulated in school and became, you know, they had a lot of behavioral issues, and then their parents were able to adjust that educational need and they were able to get that met. So there's a lot of complex there, but just be aware and ask yourself, like, did I get my needs met? And was there a time where my needs didn't get met? If we go into physical neglect, again, and we're going to go back to the Harlow study, what we mentioned about kind of that feeling of, if I felt like my emotional needs were met, but some of my physical needs weren't met as often, that'll affect me differently than if I didn't have either. And it depends for how long. That's the other thing, right? So say, if you remember that when I did intakes for kids coming into services, I would ask them, has there ever been a time where you didn't have enough food, clothing, shelter, those kinds of things? And some kids will be like, we don't have enough food. And I would say, what do you mean? And they're saying, you have to make everything. And I said, well, what kinds of things do you have to make? Well, there's rice, but you have to make it. So I can't make it by myself, but everyone else has chips. That's not what we're talking about, people. It's the actual lack of food resources. It's when you don't have access to all the nutrients you need, not just what you want. Yeah. Same thing. I've had kids who experience homelessness with their families, or even by their own choice, kids who ran away experienced homelessness. And those kinds of things. So that's very different for short periods of time than chronic homelessness or having to live on the streets and those kinds of things. So there's inadequate, and then there's none at all. And those two things, and the physical neglect, we need to be aware of. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that proper supervision is, especially for children, part of physical safety. Right, they do not understand their environment well enough to make those decisions, and so that's the other thing that can be physical neglect, is they weren't present, so maybe, you know, somebody wasn't there and a kid got burned because they were trying to make food and they shouldn't have been trying to make food. It wasn't an age-appropriate task for that child. Those kinds of things are all under the physical neglect realm.
Well, it's also those, like, I mean, being properly watched, that's also emotional neglect. It's the idea that if I am watched by my family, then they care about how I'm doing. There's also an emotional component of that. Like, we can break down each of these things probably into a myriad of different types of neglect with it. But I think with what you're describing, like that idea of knowing, like, because that was a big thing too when I worked with younger kids in like a residential center, because they had some big behavioral issues, because we had a couple kids who had extreme neglect in their history. And it, for them, it was just interesting that I would just sit there and want to be with them and watch them, not even like needing to necessarily involve myself too much in what they're doing, but being aware of like, oh, hey, be careful, you're getting too close to the side. And they look at me completely like baffled by why I even care. Kind of that thing of saying like, why are you spending your time watching me? Usually I just go and do my own thing. And it's that idea of saying like, there's an emotional component of that, of knowing like someone cares and someone's watching and knowing what I'm doing. Not like every second, it's not excessive, but just knowing like, oh, hey, if you're outside, be careful about this. Or, hey, you're playing inside and you're getting too close to the hot pan. You know, the kids are just all of a sudden like kind of astounded by that. And so I think that with what you're describing, absolutely, there is definitely a physical neglect component if their physical safety or physical well-being is not being taken care of. But then also it really does boil down. They are very kind of interdependent, or they're very interlinked on that of what they mean. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to point out, because it's hard to understand sometimes where, and there doesn't need to be a black and white line. There doesn't need to be, oh, this is only physical neglect or only emotional. The truth is that, like I was talking about medical neglect, usually you have multiples that come together. Usually it's not just one. And the longer neglect is experienced, the more it affects you. So, for example, children who experience short-term neglect and then that was changed are very different than children who, you know, you look at kids who are adopted after the age of 6 and they experienced ongoing neglect and then were had to pulled out of the home after many failed attempts to deal with their parents. That level of safety that they didn't have for so long will affect them very differently than, oh yeah, we didn't have anywhere to stay one night. Those are two very different things. So there's a lot of things that lead into it. There's the intent, the extent of the neglect, and then how it affected you. So that's one of the things I see a lot as a therapist and working with parents of kids who are adopted, is understanding that you can give them a lot of love, but Taylor brought in that idea that they're either going to be, he said, evil geniuses, and I'm going to say they're going to be so sure nobody else will meet their need that they'll do whatever it takes to meet their own need, also known as an evil genius, and or they're going to be so, they're going to feel so clingy to their caregiver that you'll find that they will go into that fawn state. And they go into constant people pleasing. And I talked to a client even just this week who talked about how the emotional neglect that she experienced led her to this level of people pleasing, where she doesn't feel safe unless everyone around her is happy. Mm-hmm. And that's not how things should be. You should feel like kids are not in charge of parents' emotions, and as adults, we should not ever make the children in charge of our emotions.
Yeah, agreed. When it comes to, so once we identify the kind of neglect that maybe we may have experienced or have been introduced to, or even had, like, when I say experienced to, you don't have to have had, like Jen said, like the extreme neglect part of it. It's just like we kind of know what kind of area it's been in. Once we've identified that, then I think one of the big things is we identify if we are continually still, or if we're still in neglect, or if this was a past event, right? And so I think that can sometimes be kind of hard to determine, because sometimes if we've had past neglect, it definitely interferes with continued issues going forward, but we may not be having the same kind of source where it's coming from. But I don't know, what do you guys think about that? Like, next steps after identifying that neglect has occurred.
So one of the, I have a couple steps that I would say, and we talked a little bit about this early in the episode. One of the things that happens with neglect is that you didn't have that person to co-regulate with. There's a book that I like for kids who struggle with their emotions called Beyond Consequences. And I like that book specifically because it starts out by talking about how as adults we're responsible to help co-regulate kids. And so with all these types of neglect, they didn't get those. And so by stepping in and starting to realize that you're going to need a safe person to co-regulate with, and that's one of the reasons that therapy can be really helpful. And one of the first tasks we have to do in that co-regulation in therapy is to deeply acknowledge the neglect. We have to accept it. There's a grieving process that goes into processing neglect, right? And and accepting that you're not somebody without feelings. So say you're what Taylor called an evil genius. So it's not that you're not, that you don't have feelings and you don't care, but that you've blocked them off and that they don't seem to serve you, and so you have to start to build that relationship with them.
No, I'm talking about specifically in the extreme cases in the neglect.
Yeah, and But paying attention and learning how to pay attention to your feelings, because that was not modeled to you. And that's what co-regulation is when we say something like to a child, if they're crying, to say, oh my gosh, you look so sad. I'm so sorry. What happened? You're going to be okay. Let's take a deep breath. Those are all co-regulation things that children need in order to learn how to manage their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So the one other thing that I would say, as if you've experienced neglect, that it's really important that you start to identify likes and dislikes and develop that practice of self-compassion for yourself, nurturing and soothing. Because again, you weren't taught healthy self-soothing. So that might be something that you work with your therapist to say, what does self-soothing look like? And how do I start to practice that in my own life so that I can start to feel some more emotional stability? And some people will only do self-soothing through comforting, but I really have done some research lately on the yin and yang of self-compassion and recognizing that there is that validating part. But the other part of self-compassion that we need to do is protecting ourselves, motivating ourselves, and kind of prioritizing what's most important to us. So I would encourage you to look into both sides of self-compassion if you're starting to do this work.
When it comes to that, along with self-soothing, I think that's when we definitely, like, going back to boundaries, right? That's when we go back to the idea of saying, like, okay, how do I have a boundaried, I don't know, I'm trying to think the best way to put it. How do I include someone else in my life that is in a boundaried way that I feel like can be helpful as well? Because as much as self-soothing is definitely a big thing that we need to work on, it's also about finding, like, if we're talking about neglect being very much an interpersonal issue, right? It's not like I'm neglecting myself. And I mean, you can neglect yourself, but it's when we're talking about it in this sense. And I guess we could talk about self-neglect, but in this scenario, we're talking about a person often in a developmental state being neglected by someone who should be affording them these things. And so it isn't so much you need to find someone to take care of you, but you find people who help support you in finding that for yourself.
Well, and I want to add too, if you're somebody who neglected yourself, you had that modeled for you. As humans, we're social learners. And so you didn't learn to neglect yourself in a bubble. You learned that from someone else. And so even just acknowledging that and recognizing, you know, that I need, again, and I love that we went over the drama triangle, so now I can refer to it. You need a coach and not a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.